The following is a conversation with Michael Smith. He's the North Asian correspondent for the Australian Financial Review, and he's a former guest on this podcast as well. He appeared on episode number 45 to speak about his book, The Last Correspondent, which sort of details his forced exit from China. Michael's been writing quite a bit about the Russia-Ukraine war from the perspective of China and Xi Jinping, thinking about his reactions, monitoring closely sort of his movements. So in this podcast, we spoke about, really, we just tackled from several angles how China's territorial ambitions for Taiwan is affected by everything that's going on in Ukraine with Russia. This was recorded on Monday, the 7th of March at 8 a.m. You'll find links to Michael's work, his articles in AFR, as well as his Twitter in the description of the podcast. And with no further ado, here is Michael Smith. Michael Smith, hello, mate, from Tokyo. Welcome back. Thank you.
Hi, Ryan. Thanks for having me back again. A lot's happened since we last spoke.
Yeah, a lot has happened. And it's my pleasure. I've been reading what you've been writing about, sort of Xi Jinping's role in all of this in AFR. And so I am very happy that I get the opportunity to ask you directly about it. And we could sort of tiptoe around it and sort of slowly build to what the ultimate question is. But I figured we may as well just start with the biggest question. And that is, how emboldened or put off does Xi Jinping and China feel about their territorial ambitions for Taiwan, having just witnessed and are witnessing what's going on right now in Ukraine?
Yeah, look, Russia's invasion of the Ukraine has triggered an enormous debate about the future of Taiwan. So concern about Taiwan and China's territorial ambitions in the Indo-Pacific have been building up for some time. I mean, for many years, even before we even had an inkling of what Putin was going to do in the Ukraine. So these concerns have been around for a while, particularly here in Japan, more than many places. But I think they've really accelerated since the invasion. The first really interesting thing that happened between China and Russia was on the sidelines of the Beijing Winter Olympics, when Vladimir Putin jetted in and he had this very high profile meeting with Xi Jinping and in the Great Hall of the People, and the two leaders signed this quite astounding communique, sort of pledging to work together. And I mean, I think the wording mentioned that there would be no forbidden areas of cooperation. So, this has really alarmed a lot of governments in Washington and Canberra and elsewhere. And people were sort of thinking, well, how close are China and Russia really? Are they likely to have each other's back when there is a war? Would Russia come to China's aid over Taiwan, vice versa? But I think when they had that meeting, a few weeks ago now, there's a lot of speculation that even China, that even Xi Jinping might not have been aware of the fact that Putin was going to go in so hard in the way he did. I mean, I think it served China's interest to back Putin in terms of pushing back against NATO and the United States. So obviously China and Russia have a huge shared interest here in not having the US and Western liberal democracies sort of dominate the world order. But what's happened since then is, Russia's gone into the Ukraine. There's a lot of speculation about whether this is good or bad for China. Would Xi Jinping really have sanctioned something like this? Does it want to be put in the same basket as Russia? It's not entirely clear. But so this has triggered the inevitable debate about Taiwan. And look, there's two schools of thought here. I mean, 2 weeks ago, the start of this invasion, a lot of the serious policy analysts were sort of saying, well, this will embolden China to act on Taiwan sooner rather than later. If Putin could be seen to be sort of using this diplomatic leverage to get his way, well, that might be an incentive for China to do the same and to make its own threats to get the US to back off a bit. But what we've seen, particularly in the last week or so, you know, this very messy invasion of the Ukraine, it's not quite going Russia's way. It's probably going to come at an enormous cost to Russia. You've got a very collective pushback from, you know, from the entire West. And I'm probably siding a bit more with the analysts who are sort of saying, well, this actually might make Xi Jinping think twice about trying to take Taiwan, because it's obviously going to be messy. It's not going to be very easy. There's going to be blowback for the Chinese economy if they go down that path. So I think China's obviously watching everything that Russia's doing with great interest. I think it will learn a lot from what Russia's doing and will take that on board. But whether it accelerates a push into Taiwan or not is another question. I'm not sure it will. I think China will want to take Taiwan eventually, regardless of what happens in Ukraine, regardless of the outcome there. But it's sort of a matter of how and when it decides to do that.
Yeah, and they're going to be paying extraordinary attention to the sort of sanctioning side of things, aren't they? Trying to learn how they can become more resilient to what is essentially the playbook now for an aggressive nation. How much can we... Obviously, you can only speculate, but you've got a closer ear to this than most. Like, how much did Xi Jinping sort of know about Putin's ambitions? It is quite telling that they met right at the end of the games, right before he did the invasion. They are like the caricature, two great nations in opposition to the West. They may be, although having a terrible history together, they might hold hands for a little while to like achieve their mutual ambition. Is there any sense for that we know how much Xi Jinping knew?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question, because I think either way, China comes out of this looking very bad. I mean, if Xi Jinping, you know, knew about Putin's plans and did nothing to persuade him otherwise, did nothing to alert the rest of the world, I mean, it obviously makes China, you know, look sort of very bad. And, you know, it makes Xi Jinping look implicit to all the human suffering going on in Ukraine at the moment. I mean, the other, you know, piece of speculation is that Xi asked Putin to hold off on the invasion until after the Winter Olympics was over, so it didn't ruin things for him. And look, Putin did, you know, the invasion did happen sort of shortly after the games closed. So there is an argument that...
Yeah, just a day or two after the closing ceremony, yeah.
That's right. You know, and the Chinese foreign ministry have been asked this question, did Xi know about this? And of course, they deflected that and didn't really answer it. But look, it's hard to know exactly. The other more common school of thought and some very respected Chinese policy analysts who really have tentacles into the Chinese diplomatic community and the Chinese government, they argue that this really took everyone by surprise. China wasn't quite ready for this, and they have been thrown off guard by this. And, you know, at the end of the day, China probably doesn't want things to play out in the way it is. And, you know, it's not really benefiting China, certainly not in the short term. I mean, there's sort of global economic upheaval as a result of this. And look, China ultimately, and Xi ultimately, values the stability of the Chinese economy at the moment. So Xi's got this very big political year coming up. So later this year, the National People's Congress will meet. They are very, very likely to endorse him as president for a third term. Now, this is a very controversial sort of elevation. China doesn't want anything to go wrong this year. And you're seeing it this week. The National People's Congress is meeting in Beijing, and the emphasis is really on economic stability. They want to keep stimulating the economy. They need it to grow. They need the Chinese people to remain sort of stable and happy. And I think that is still their priority at the moment. So, you know, Russia's a big risk for them. You know, of course, there could be some upside for China from sanctions against Russia. And of course, you know, China might be able to pick up a lot of oil and gas on the cheap from Russia. So it might not be all bad for the Chinese economy. But at the same time, you know, I don't think, despite everything that China has done, I don't think it wants to be lumped in the same court as a country like Russia. I mean, you know, China still wants to trade with the US. It still needs Europe. It still wants to be a respected member of the global community. So, you know, I think it's really torn there. But at the same time, you've got two authoritarian states with a shared interest in not letting the US and Europe and NATO dominate the New World Order. So there's a very strong argument to say that this could be an opportunity for China to sort of further strengthen its position by siding with Russia. But look, I think it's a very uneasy alliance. As you mentioned before, China and Russia have this long, complex history going back to the 17th century, and there's been huge periods in history where there's been no love lost between China and Russia. I mean, a contact of mine who you know, knows China very well, he was saying the view in Beijing is that the Putin's a thug and Russians are thugs, and they don't want to be lumped into the same camp. So I think they're walking a really fine tightrope here diplomatically.
You, in your first answer, you said that they will take Taiwan eventually. So you sort of see it as an inevitable eventuality. Could you maybe just explain why their want for this small island is so strong, given that their goal is further stability for the people, and China is in a very perilous position, right? So they have a myriad of economic issues, right? And so if their goal is stability, and having seen what has happened to Russia with sanctions, those sort of equivalent sanctions would just absolutely cripple China, because they're even more dependent on the globalized economy than Russia was. You know, just energy alone, extraordinarily energy dependent. So if their goal is stability, and their goal is also Taiwan, How do they meet in the middle there? Is this a really good sign for Taiwan that it could be pushed back down far the road?
Yeah, look, I don't think that's going to happen, sadly. I think, you know, ultimately, China wants Taiwan. China, the Communist Party, views Taiwan as part of mainland Chinese territory. And obviously, there's a lot of history, you know, involved there. I mean, China... you know, the Taiwan we know today was a result of the civil war in China in the 60s, and the nationalists moving to Taiwan and sort of taking it over. And I think it's a matter of sort of national pride and deeply ingrained in Communist Party history that Taiwan will one day be reunified with China. So there are all those factors, and obviously economically it works very well for China. China would love to get its hands on Taiwan just for its semiconductor industry alone. But more importantly, if China can take Taiwan, it will have this foothold in the Indo-Pacific. I mean, it will really pave the way for China's dominance in the Indo-Pacific and the withdrawal of the US. So that obviously has implications for Australia and Japan. So it would really cement China's power in this part of the world. So strategically, incredibly important for China. But as you said, in the short term, China doesn't want to mess with its economy. You know, and on top of that as well, there's the threat of pushback or military action by the United States and its allies if China does try to take Taiwan by force. And of course, that's really complicated because, you know, the US haven't categorically stated whether they would come to Taiwan's aid militarily.
Strategic ambiguity.
That's right. And so, you know, there's a lot of risky elements here. Would Xi Jinping want to gamble that away by just sort of trying to take Taiwan? Would the US be willing to take on China here? And there's all kinds of scenarios. Could it escalate into a nuclear conflict or you know, a scenario where there's nuclear threats flying around? So, look, I mean, no one really knows what Xi Jinping thinks, but... you know, but he plays it pretty safe. I mean, I always look at what happened in Hong Kong as a bit of a read on how Taiwan might play out. And I mean, Hong Kong's different scenario to Taiwan. It sort of was part of China's territory. But China took Hong Kong almost by stealth during the global pandemic. It introduced these national security laws, which made it impossible to revive the protest movement. And it sort of did it peacefully, if you know, for want of a better word, without bringing in the PLA. So, you know, so one school of thought is it doesn't want to take Taiwan by force. It could bide its time. It might be years away. Mm. It might wait till there's a more sympathetic government in Taiwan. But it can use a whole range of measures to bring Taiwan to its knees. It could, you know, really hurt the economy. It could use cyber attacks. Use misinformation over many, many years to sort of bring Taiwan to its knees and force Taipei to the negotiating table without having to go to war with the US or anyone else. But you know, that's one scenario. The other scenario is that you know, Xi does feel a bit more confident and decides to move in sooner rather than later.
If you think about the like unemotional nuts and bolts trade-off, I think it's pretty clear that whatever sort of cultural upside and Russian unification upside Putin might get is clearly a bad trade-off. Can you say unemotionally whether getting Taiwan would be a beneficial trade-off given the huge economic sanctions and potential military threat from the West that China would face in response to trying to take Taiwan?
Yeah, well, I think that's the biggest risk for Xi Jinping. And look, China doesn't really have a history of going to war with other nations. It doesn't really like that. I don't think the Chinese people want that to happen. It's worked very hard for decades to build up this sort of very powerful economy, but at the same time, it is building up its military. And I just can't see Xi taking a gamble at this point in history where he could throw all that away. But of course, China, you know, is becoming more and more unpredictable. So you never know. I think China's a very confident country now. I think it's arrived at this point in history where it feels like it doesn't need to be pushed around by the United States or anyone else. I think it feels Taiwan is part of its territory. And it is entitled to make this kind of move. But yeah, I just think particularly this year, I don't think they want to risk damaging the Chinese economy. I think Xi really wants to get to the end of the year, get through COVID as well. That's another hurdle for the Chinese economy. Become leader again for another 5 years, but definitely get the wheels in motion for something to happen. But at the same time, you look at what is happening with the global order, the rise of authoritarian powers, and this is all coming to a head at the moment with Russia and Ukraine. So, you know, I think if Putin does get his way, gets the West to back off in any way, well, it doesn't bode well for Western liberal democracies at all. And, you know, China will probably use this to its advantage at some stage. Mm.
Given the fact that Taiwan has this giant target on its back, the Taipei Tower, which is like, I don't know, the Centrepoint Tower in Sydney or a great landmark in any big city, they shone the blue and yellow light to signify solidarity with Ukraine. Was this a little bit, this clearly an act of defiance against China? It's more than just signaling solidarity with Ukraine, but was it a little bit unnecessary, like a bit of a, you know, I, I don't know a good turn of phrase, but is it a little bit unnecessary?
Provoking China or...
Yeah. Like unnecessarily poking them?
Yeah. I think Taipei, the Taiwanese government, is certainly using the situation in Ukraine to sort of really push its argument and to, you know, to get the West to rally around it, for sure. And I don't blame them. I mean, I think they're really using the Russian situation to say to the West, hey, you know, democracy's under threat here. You've got to help us. You've got to come to our aid. And we very, very strongly support the Ukrainian people. And I think that's been very clear. I mean, I think there's been lots of demonstrations in the streets in Taiwan over the last week or so in support of Ukraine. And that also reflects the feelings of the Taiwanese people who, you know, I think they see themselves as Ukrainians at the moment. They really don't want China moving in and taking control of the country. And you know, that sentiment in Taiwan's been really building up for the last few years, particularly because of what happened in Hong Kong. I think most Taiwanese people saw what happened in Hong Kong and realised one country, two systems can't work. They don't trust the Chinese Communist Party. So, the Taiwanese government is certainly using this to send a message to the West. And look, the West is responding. I mean, the United States last week sent this very high-level delegation of sort of former security officials into Taiwan, and that was a bit of a show of defiance. That was the US saying, hey, we recognize Taiwan, we share your concerns, and sort of sticking it to China a little bit. So there's provocation going on both sides here, and I guess that's when the threat of a conflict can escalate. If the US move too quickly and too aggressively on this issue of Taiwan's independence, which it still doesn't formally recognize, at what point will there be a trigger where China responds?
Mm. Could you just say, for the record, how Xi Jinping has reacted to this almost step by step since it started, just so we know officially where the state is at?
On the Ukraine? Yeah. Yeah, look, I think in more recent weeks, it was the meeting on the night of the opening ceremony of the Beijing Games. He sat down with Putin. They released this sort of very strong communique outlining their willingness to cooperate with each other. And I think, you know, at the time, there was sort of speculation building up, you know, could there be a simultaneous invasion of Ukraine and Beijing would make a move on Taiwan at the same time? But I think, I think that's a worst case scenario. I don't think there's any sign that's going to happen. There's certainly no sign that China's getting ready to invade Taiwan at all. Now, since then, Russia did move on Ukraine, look, China... some people say China's sitting on the fence, but it's doing more than that. It's indirectly supporting Russia's actions in the Ukraine by not condemning them. It hasn't condemned them. The Chinese foreign ministry have repeatedly refused to call it an invasion. You know, they're asked by journalists every day, is it invasion? They really play this down. Chinese state media have really played, really played the whole thing down. China's consistently blamed the US and NATO for what's happening in Ukraine. So indirectly, you know, it is backing Putin. It hasn't sort of actually come out and said that. The language has shifted a little bit in the last week or so. I think the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, had a meeting with his counterpart in Ukraine, and he did make a statement afterwards, you know, calling for restraint from both sides. I mean, they didn't just sort of ask Russia to show restraint, but I think he said China was very alarmed at what was happening there. There were some references to the, to the danger to civilians in Ukraine. So the language sort of shifted a bit, and that prompted a lot of analysts to sort of speculate that that China was actually a bit caught out by this. China is actually a bit concerned as to how the whole situation is playing out. But China's also trying to position itself as the good guy in all this. It repeatedly says, look, it's willing to act as a negotiator between Russia and the Ukraine. But at the same time, it's not. It doesn't seem to be putting any pressure on Putin to.
And they're not fooling anyone that they are actually.
No, I mean they're not telling Putin to put down the weapons and start talking at the same time. So the language is shifting a little bit. It's sort of unclear. It's going to be really interesting to see how the whole sanctions issue plays out. So China won't implement sanctions against Russia. It's been very public in its belief that it doesn't support sanctions, and that's for an obvious reason, because it's been the target of Western sanctions many times. But it's going to be really interesting to see whether, you know, is it going to start buying a lot more Russian oil and gas? Will Chinese companies breach these Western sanctions against Russia? There'll be implications for them if that happens. So it is going to be quite interesting to see how much support China actually gives Russia. I mean, my feeling is it will be fairly conservative. It just wants to stay out of this, and you know, it won't do anything that sort of hurts its own economy and gets the West any more offside than it could be with China at the moment.
Do you have any indication as to how much direct communication the states have between each other? And by, I mean, Russia and China. Because clearly they met. That's, you know, a signaling act for the rest of the world to know. But I'm just always curious, how much do they actually talk to each other to actually know what's going on? Is there any chance that they exchange emails and stuff like this?
I think Putin and Xi did have a phone call, I think, late last week. It was about a week ago. And that was covered in Chinese state media. So they did have a phone call. Look, I'm pretty confident if Putin's going to answer the phone to anyone, it's probably going to be Xi Jinping before anyone else. So I'm pretty confident there are channels of communication. Certainly their foreign ministers and Xi Jinping and Putin are speaking on the phone. You know, whether Russia's telling China everything that it's up to is another question. I mean, they all have their own intelligence. So I think they are talking. It's just done, you know, and people talk about this sort of great friendship that Xi Jinping and Putin have. And there's reports that they actually do get on quite well. And they do, you know, Xi Jinping supposedly respects Putin, but it's hard to say how much that personal relationship will play out in diplomatic relations between the two countries. Yeah, it's just hard to say. I mean, it's pretty safe to say if one single power could persuade Russia to stop or stop Russia, it's probably China's the only one left, really. But whether if Xi Jinping picked up the phone and said stop it now, would Putin listen or not? Probably not. It's hard to say.
Yeah. All right, Michael. Look, I just got two more questions for you. One at the end about Chinese military spending, because I thought that was really interesting that you wrote about as well. But first, I couldn't help but... I mean, I am not... This isn't my observation. This is a very commonly held observation. But the similarities between Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping... because whilst they are from two opposite cultures and have had different life experiences, they nonetheless find themselves the sole decision maker, effectively, of huge populations. And in China's case, the second most significant economy in the world. In Russia's case, a pretty lousy economy, but they have a lot of energy. So therefore, they are a more powerful player than an equivalent GDP economy to theirs might otherwise be. So... for so long, people looked at Putin generally as like a meme, almost, you know, and this is maybe just my own generation projecting onto it, because I know that if you've been around for a longer time, you wouldn't have seen it that way. But for me, you know, like, he was an obvious thug, but he sort of did things over there. And, you know, Russia's a bit of a crazy place, and that's how things are done. So I suppose he's the right man for the job. It's kind of like a very simplistic take, but nonetheless, I think it's kind of how a lot of people would have seen him, myself included. And it turns out, you know, yeah, he's one man in charge of 145 million people. That's an enormous population in Russia. And all policy decisions are essentially at his beck and call. He decides how to direct these huge forces. Now, that exact same comparison can easily be made of Xi. He's a bit of a meme guy. You know, he's... people don't know necessarily how evil he might be or how innocent he might be, but he's in charge of 1.4 billion people. So how prophetic is Putin's public image downfall in the last weeks as people have sort of seen, holy crap, this is a really bad state of affairs that one man is in charge of 145 million people, who it turns out most of that 140, well, not most, but a significant amount of that 145 million are not interested in what's going on. How prophetic is his public image downfall, and how worried should we be about Xi's exact same grip on China, and what other comparisons can be made there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the really scary thing about this whole situation, that the rise of the rise of authoritarianism, I suppose, in a world where the liberal democratic order seems to be waning, particularly the influence the US has over the global order. And of course, you know, the US, despite all its faults, is still a democracy. Its president answers to the people. It answers to a legal system, to the courts, all kinds of checks and balances. And then you've got, yeah, as you said, you've got Xi and Putin, two leaders in charge of enormously powerful countries, huge economies, and they don't answer to anyone, really. I mean, they can do exactly what they want. There's no elections, and I think Putin's very similar to Xi in terms of, you know, they don't tolerate any kind of dissent, and they don't seem to have any challenges within their own ranks. I mean, that's a big similarity. So, I mean, you know, Xi certainly has this incredibly tight grip on power, and unless there's something going on at senior levels of the party that we don't know about, he doesn't have any challenges. There are no sort of factions in the Communist Party seeking to challenge him. Look, I'm sure there are a lot of people that don't agree with what he's doing, but you know, if you disagree with Xi Jinping in China, you disappear or worse. And look, Putin's in a similar position, and that's when it gets really scary, because you've just got two individuals, and you know, we don't actually know a lot about Xi Jinping's personality. I mean, that's the kind of weird thing, that a lot's been written about his childhood and how he rose up through the ranks of the party. But you know, since he became leader, we don't know anything about him. He doesn't do interviews. You know, we know who he's married to and who his kids are, but we don't really know what he's like or what's really driving him. We probably know a little bit more about Putin and his characteristics, but yeah, so you know, so they do share those common traits, and perhaps that's something that has drawn them together. I mean, it seems like, you know, they have a bit of respect for each other. Yeah, so I think that's what they have in common.
Mm. But people don't, I think, generally wouldn't see Xi Jinping as dangerous of a character as they now see Putin, right? And it was
That's the second element of your question, and you know, without knowing how Xi Jinping thinks, I don't think he wants to be lumped into the same box as Putin. I mean, I think there is a element of thought amongst Chinese leadership that the Russians are still a bunch of thugs, or the Russian leadership are still a bunch of thugs, and China's a much more powerful country. I mean, I think China would still like to be respected on the world stage. I mean, it's done so much damage to its soft power over the last few years, particularly with all this wolf warrior diplomacy. But I think at the end of the day, Xi Jinping wants to be respected. He wants to be taken seriously. He you know, he doesn't want the whole world offside and ganging up against him. So I think he must be sitting back and looking at what's happening to Putin and thinking, you know, that I don't want that to happen to me. So look, this could be, you know, maybe wishful thinking. It could be influencing the way he acts in coming years, particularly with China's sort of own territorial ambitions. Having said that, I think he still believes Taiwan's part of China, and you know, he will still do whatever it takes to reunify Taiwan with mainland China, possibly during his leadership in his lifetime.
Mm. I guess what I'm trying to do is just further tarnish the public opinion of Xi Jinping. Because, you know, Putin is the same person he was 1 month ago, with the same economy, same ambitions. But his public image is two different things. Right now, people literally are calling, they're making endless comparisons to him being Hitler. And I think that's wrong, but like, he's clearly a war criminal at this stage, right? So he's at the bottom of public opinion. There is no one left to like him except for the conspiratorial types. Xi Jinping isn't seen the same way, yet he's capable of these things because he's one man in charge of a giant popular, giant military. So maybe I didn't craft the question that well, but that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to change... whoever's listening to this, just think of Xi Jinping in much more malicious, bad-intended frame.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I think despite everything Xi Jinping's done and the human rights abuses in China and the way China behaves on the world stage, he's certainly not in Putin's league. He's, you know, they're not invading another country. They're not killing, you know, China are not coming in somewhere and killing civilians. And China's constantly holding itself up as a respectable global citizen, a peace negotiator. I mean, Xi gives speech after speech about, you know, the common good of mankind. And I think he wants to be seen that way. He wants to be taken seriously. He wants China to be taken seriously. So, yeah, you're right. I don't think... He doesn't want to be seen as another Hitler, and I think this is a situation he will want to invade, and for that reason, yeah, I just can't see Xi waking up tomorrow, sending the PLA into Taiwan and massacring hundreds of thousands of people. I don't think that's his style, and you know I don't think he wants to be branded a thug. Or a bully or worse either. So, I think he'll be taking all this into consideration.
Yeah. Finally, Michael, I see that I've maybe taken too much of your time. I hope you don't mind. But China has... your last piece was on China's defense spending. Can you give us a sense of the Chinese military, the capacity, capability, and make comparisons if possible?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the numbers, but I mean, China, the National People's Congress met this week, so they announced a 7.1% increase in defense spending. And look, this is not unusual. China's been ramping up its defense spending for years and years. I just think there's a lot more attention on it at the moment. The really interesting trigger point will be 2027, when China has set a target to have what it calls a fully modernized military, a fully modernized People's Liberation Army. So that includes lots of things. You know, it's ramping up its military technology capabilities. And people say, look, that could be a trigger point for moving on Taiwan when it's really confident about its military ability. I mean, there's a lot of analysis done on who's got the stronger military, US or China. I mean, a lot of experts say the US would struggle to defend Taiwan in this patch of the world. Its naval capabilities are probably weaker than China's. That's not to say, we're not talking about globally, if China sort of tried to invade the US, they probably wouldn't have a chance there. But in this patch of the world, I think there's a very strong argument to suggest that if China and the US were willing to throw everything at it, that China could possibly win. And, you know, and China's a nuclear power as well. Don't forget, they have a fraction of the number of nuclear weapons that the US has or Russia has, but they still have them. So they can always use the nuclear threat as a deterrent, but it certainly has the technology, it has the manpower, it has a very strong People's Liberation Army, and it certainly has the capability to take Taiwan if it really wanted to.
Yeah. My next question was about nukes. Do we know how China thinks about them? They've clearly never, used, well, only one country's used one, But do we know how China is thinking about nuclear weapons?
Yeah, look, it's not something they talk about very often. And I think there's a sense, you know, there's certainly no North Korea. They're not going to be sort of threatening people with nuclear attacks. I don't think there's a history of China ever doing that. So I don't think we can put them in the same camp as Russia or North Korea. So no, not at all. I just, you know, I don't think a nuclear war is something that China would be even willing to toy with. I don't think it's something the Chinese people would tolerate. And of course, this is another thing. If, you know, if the situation with Russia, Ukraine does become some kind of nuclear threat, even if it's in Europe, but China doesn't want this. I mean, of course, you know, no one wants this, but a huge amount of risks to China and its own population, its economy, is something like that happens. So I just don't think that's a path China would want to go down. But again, if it got to a point with Taiwan between China and the US, I mean, some academics theorize that China could play the nuclear card and threaten the US in that way.
Like saying, back off, this is ours.
Yes. I mean, you know, would they push the button? I really hope not. And no one really knows. But it hasn't been a big sort of talking point. You know, it's not something China talks about much.
Yeah. All right, Mike. Well, is there anything left on the table at this moment relevant for China to the war that you would like to say?
Not really. I guess in this part of the world, I think the situation playing out in Europe at the moment with Ukraine is being watched very closely in the Indo-Pacific and this part of the world. I think it's seen as a real litmus test as to how China might behave over Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific in general. So I think it's all interconnected.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
And I look forward to speaking with you again. Thanks for the update. Hello, my very dear and generous Geopolitics and Power podcast listener. I am making this quick little audio message just to say that every episode that has appeared on this podcast feed has come from my primary podcast feed, which is called A Curious Worldview. I upload episodes here that are of a geopolitical nature just to, you know, capture more or less more audience. But I just want to make this appeal to you that if you're listening to this now, these audio waves, whatever they are, then let's make the assumption that we have more in common than we do not. And so while we might be met here out of a mutual interest in this geopolitical issue, I just want to say that there are many, many more things covered on the other podcast feed. For example, Marcel van Oosten, one of the world's greatest photographers, an exploration of his work and his worldview. Leonard Mlodinow, one of the close personal friends of Stephen Hawking, a former student and friend of Richard Feynman, a world-class theoretical physicist and multiple times best-selling author. He's been on the show. Routine discussions of Taleb, routine discussions of Friedrich Nietzsche. I'm doing a multi-part series with Stephen Hicks, arguably the authority living today on Friedrich Nietzsche. Truly, X, Y, and Z topic. The whole point of A Curious Worldview is that I want to, with that podcast feed, corner the podcast market for eclectic curiosities in whatever country it is you're listening in from. And so while here we're speaking about geopolitics and power, I just want to make this urge, this plea to you, the person listening to me speaking right now, to go and subscribe to that other podcast feed and become a regular listener there. Because whilst every episode might not be for you, I'm hoping that 1 in 10, 1 in a few would be. And so while I will continue to upload every episode that has of geopolitical theme to this feed, I just want you to know that for every 1 episode that comes out here, there may be 4 or 5 that come out there. And hey, podcasting is free, so why not add another subscription to your list and also be a generous spammer and subscribe, review, all the good stuff, get your mates, get your girlfriends, get your parents, random people on the street, pull them over, get them to subscribe to The Curious Worldview, get them to rank it, review it. I don't know about rank, but certainly review. And so thank you. I just wanted to leave that message with you. Ciao.